You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
Welcome to another episode of the Meadowlarkers. No Kate Fagan this week, but we have Tom Haberstroh and Amin El Hassan. I'm Howard Bryant, and today we are talking Enes Kanter, the Boston Celtics center who, after years of criticizing his native Turkey for its terrible human rights record and receiving death threats and was exiled essentially from his country, became a U.S. citizen last week. He even changed his name to Enes Kanter Freedom. And at first, I think this sort of appeared to be a classic story, the athlete from an oppressive country finding his paradise in America. Then one of Freedom's first acts was to go on Fox News with Tucker Carlson, and this is what he had to say.
I'm going to just say this, and I'm going to be honest. People should feel really blessed and lucky to be in this, be in America, because, you know, they love to criticize it, but when you live a country like Turkey or you know, China or somewhere else, you will appreciate the freedoms you have here. So I feel like they should just, please, they should just keep their mouth shut and stop criticizing the greatest nation in the world, and they should focus on, you know, their freedoms and their human rights and their democracy. So this is, America gave me everything I have, so I definitely appreciate the United States of America.
Freedom already has had a contentious relationship with LeBron James on and off the court, and then he said he didn't know if LeBron was, quote, educated enough, unquote, on human rights, but he was here to educate him. And then last night, Freedom tweeted this live round at Jeremy Lin. Shame on you, JLin7. Haven't you had enough of that dirty Chinese communist money feeding you to stay silent? How disgusting of you to turn your back against your country and your people. Stand with Taiwan. Stop bowing to money and the dictatorship. Morals over money, brother. Whoa. I mean, never mind the fact that, you know, Jeremy Lin is from California, but that's another story we'll get to. So a heartwarming human interest story has now turned into Enes Kanter Freedom, Threat or Menace? I mean, you've not been a huge Kanter guy from the start, but what were you seeing in this that a lot of people didn't?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. Knowing Kanter, knowing what his personality is like from being around the league, forget about activism or social justice. He's always been a bit of a blowhard. He's always been a more carnival barker than actual. The carnival barking has always outpaced the productivity for him.
And they used to call it a clubhouse lawyer in the old days?
Yes, the clubhouse, yes, the locker room lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite inside basketball terms, the locker room lawyer, except he's one that doesn't necessarily have much of an audience. It's kind of people have just understood. That's just NSU. Let him say what he's going to say. He doesn't mean harm by it. He just likes to hear himself talk. What he went through and what he continues to go through from the respect of his native land of Turkey, is real, and it is scary, and it is something that most people will not be able to understand. And I believe that everything he did and said in that regard was, I mean, it was the truth of someone trying to speak out to injustice, and injustice that isn't necessarily a popular injustice cause. Not a whole lot of people on the street know about what's happening in Turkey. So for Cantor Freedom to come out and say the things he said at the time, it really was revolutionary, and it really was something that needed to be done, and he probably was the only one who had the platform to do it, and he suffered the consequences as a result. But once he started to expand to other, more popular causes, the carnival barker started to come out more over the actual activist. And I saw a lot of those telltale signs coming out and the kind of wild accusations. And so I'm not happy to say that when I saw him on Tucker Carlson basically telling people to shut up and dribble, I wasn't surprised, because I said, that's the look of a man who heard the bell ring and now wants to hear it ring again and again and again.
Tom, you are plugged into the NBA. This is the fastball down the middle for you. The NBA is an 80% black league. And when you sort of come out on Fox News, sort of embracing the people who have told a lot of these black players to shut up and dribble, what's the blowback in the room? How is he viewed, and what was your feeling about how he went about this and what he's facing now, how he set himself up?
I don't think you'll get too many supporters within the NBA, especially because of the fact that that money over morals stance is pretty interesting when you talk about Enes Kanter, who has worn Nikes his entire NBA career. This isn't just a recent development. He is coming after Phil Knight, LeBron James, and everybody at Nike, while he himself, and I even checked this with like the Turkish national team, he wore Nikes then too. This isn't just an NBA thing where he just prefers to wear Nike shoes in the NBA. This is, he wears Jordans now, and it's not just because he is going at Michael Jordan and going at Nike. This has been his entire career. Even when he goes to the arena, he is wearing Nike clothes as a matter of a personal choice. So you can't even argue that this is like an NBA mandated uniform rule that he has to wear Nikes. So it is odd, and I don't want to get into the hypocrite Olympics that I think a lot of the culture wars and a lot of the discourse in this country have devolved into, but we have to point that out, right? I mean, is the idea that he is going after Nike while also himself wearing the Nikes in Michael Jordan's building. And I don't think that that's a commentary like this is a metaphorical thing where he is using the Jordans as a launching pad into a discussion, right? It's not a piece of art in that sense. But there is, I think, from the room in the NBA is, now you're costing us money here, right? Like going after Nike and the Boston Celtics too, I mean, are not having their games broadcast in China now because of his outspokenness about this issue. So I just think there are a lot of players who look at Kanter and say, I applaud you for speaking out for the injustices of the Turkish government. But on this issue, on Nike, this doesn't really sit well.
Well, it's not that like players are pro-China or pro the Communist Party in China. I think it comes down to, first of all, we have to acknowledge that anybody who is upset or feels strongly about what's happening in China, what the Chinese government is doing to its own citizens, whether it's the Uyghurs or other sort of kind of atrocities that government commits, we are all compromised. I'm doing this show right now on a MacBook. I can feel...
Enes Freedom tweeted out the Jeremy Lin thing from his iPhone.
From his iPhone, right? So there isn't, or it'd be incredibly difficult to be an isolationist and carry out or isolationist to the point to carry out this campaign the way he's carrying it out. Because I think it's one thing to acknowledge all the hypocrisies that we are inextricably tied into forever, it feels like. But it's another thing when you are casting the stone the way he's casting it.
He's calling everybody out. He's calling out other people as though he is above it.
But exactly, not in a nuanced way.
Is he the insufferable born again who's now found religion and he's going to get on everybody because I saw you smoke a cigarette once?
Except they still smoking cigarettes, right? That's a problem. It's not that he's the born again who's like I just quit everything last week and now all of you guys are going to hell. It's that he's still also committing the very same sins that he is arguing against other people about. And I think that's the part that turns him from, hey, this is something serious and a real discussion should be had. And I'm glad this guy's opening that topic up, that we kind of just have resigned ourselves to say, well, what are we going to do about it? It takes it from that to, no, he's just a noisemaker. And worse than being a noisemaker, he's a noisemaker that's being held by people who care nothing about these topics other than, ooh, this is the gotcha moment that we can get LeBron James, that we can get basketball, a quote-unquote liberal-leaning sport. That's all he exists to be, the noisemaker in some right-wing fascist hand, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Howard, I'm curious your thoughts, too, is when he came back for the first time in Boston, he got basically a standing ovation.
This is the thing, right? I mean, I think you made a really good point, Tom, earlier about how he may not be making friends in the room. He's making a lot of friends outside of the room. And essentially, this is the level of anti-blackness that you do live with, right? There are a lot of people who just want these guys to be quiet. And also, you're leaning into a very certain strain of Americanism where you are being told, look, how good you've got it here. You make $41 million a year. What are you complaining about? And he's tapping into that. And I think what I'm trying to figure out with him is, why are you trying to tap into that? That is, number one, my first reaction whenever I hear these things is, well, absolutely. Yes, when you live in the United States, you have a certain level of freedom. You have a certain level of privilege. You have a certain level of wealth that other people don't have, right? You may live in the projects, but you probably still have a 55-inch television. That doesn't mean you have it good. It simply means this is where we live here. These are the standards that we have. And to me, one of the problems that I had most with what he was saying, Cantor Freedom, was you're not supposed to compare the United States to Turkey. You're supposed to compare the United States to the United States. When Black people in this country are talking about what's happening in this country, they aren't comparing themselves to Siberia in the gulag. They're comparing themselves to the Constitution and their other citizens.
Exactly. They're comparing their experience to the experience of white people. That's what we're comparing.
In this country.
In this country.
Apples to apples.
Right. It's the idea is that, hey, you got it good compared to Turkey or Sudan or some other faraway land. But point to me, the white people have to go through, or the privileged in this country, I should say, a better catch-all, who have to live like Turkey and they don't.
And I think that what that does, what that strain does, is it leans you back toward this go back to Africa thing. Yeah. This strain that this isn't really your country anyway. Mm-hmm. So you don't even have the right to compare it, to compare yourself to your other American citizens.
One thing I found interesting is when he was talking about dissent and how when he came to America and he heard a player on his team cracking a joke or saying something contrary to the government, he was like totally blown away by this. And then in the next interview... Yeah, you can do this here. And I mean, you've told this story before on the show about how for a lot of immigrants and people from outside of this country, when they come to America and hear anti-government jokes or anti-presidential jokes or whatever it is, for people outside this country coming here, it feels very alien. Like, what is the, like, I don't understand how this is allowed.
And not like, I don't believe this isn't allowed. It's like, well, you guys can do that here. The story that Tom's alluding to is when I was 14 years old, came back to this country from Sudan, and I'm at the airport, and the passport control guys are talking to each other. And one guy says, what are you going to do with your tax refund? He said, I didn't get one this year. Uncle Billy got me. And I realized he's talking about Bill Clinton. And I legitimately looked for secret police to come out of their wings and just drag these people away. Because my upbringing to that point is the last place you want to say anti-government speech is in an airport. That's where they're all at.
And these are government employees doing it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, particularly that. This is ground zero for like the Gestapo and surveillance, and like they're just waiting for people to do this stuff. And it took me like a strong like couple of minutes to realize, oh no, wait, that you don't have to fear that sort of thing here. But then to your point, to turn around and say to other people, how dare you say that?
Yeah.
Right? This is what zero hint of irony.
Well, that's right. And what he's, you know, it sounds to me like when people do talk like that, what they're really saying is that once I get my level of freedom, I'm not really that sure I'm interested in yours. Here's what LeBron James had to say about the Carnival Barker, about his name being used in it. LeBron said after the Celtics and Lakers played each other a couple of weeks ago, and the Celtics after the game, LeBron said, he's definitely not someone I would give my energy to. He's trying to use my name to create an opportunity for himself. I definitely won't comment too much on that. He's always had a word or two to say in my direction. And as a man, if you've got an issue with somebody, you really come up to him. He had his opportunity tonight. I saw him in the hallway and he walked right by me.
So what Ennis is trying to say, his side of the story on this one, not to validate his opinion over LeBron's here, but to be fair, for what Ennis is saying is, yes, there was a crossing of paths in the locker room. Ennis was autographing something from a fan, a souvenir, and LeBron was coming up from behind him. He didn't know that LeBron was behind him. And then LeBron passed him in the hallway, and Ennis saw, like, LeBron just passed me. I guess he didn't want to say anything to me. So even though LeBron is saying, I saw him, he didn't say shit, this is a he said, she said thing.
I would say this, regardless of the way they cross paths, it's the NBA. Getting in contact with people isn't hard.
No,
and
it's not.
This isn't garden variety shit talking, right? Or just like, yeah, you're a bum and I said it and you can't guard me, whatever. If it were like just a regular personal problem, you could say, I have no interest or desire in squashing a beef with him. That's one thing. But when if you're Ennis Kanter and you're sincere about your activism and wanting to impact and create change, and you notice and recognize, obviously, LeBron is extremely powerful and influential and one of the leading kind of people on this particular topic of activism, you would have reached out.
Yeah, you would have said, look, intentional to you?
It feels superficial. And yeah. Surface level. His activism is just yelling about it. It's not actually, LeBron, let's sit down. You have a lot of contacts and influence over there. You have a lot of money. Let's do something that can create even a little bit of change. Maybe compromising change. Maybe you're not going to go all out and say, China's evil, I'm divesting myself of it. But also maybe just kind of nudge the process along using your power and your connects. But he doesn't have an interest in that, I don't think. I get the feeling that Ennis Kanter's freedom's interest is just to do this,
yeah.
Is to be the guy, be the guy, and to hear the bell ring again of like, and we've got the outlaw Ennis Kanter on the show today.
He is presenting himself as the Maverick.
What's amazing to me is if we step back and look at this situation, Ennis Kanter Freedom, and I'm going to misstate his name a bunch of times here. I'm still getting used to calling him Ennis Freedom. Ennis went from third string center on the Boston Celtics to the top rated cable news program in America. And if you sit there and think about what that must feel like for him, that he has come from an oppressed exile from Turkey, becomes a US citizen, and the high he must get, the bell ringing, he must be going nuts right now. What that must feel like, and he wants to get that again as a dopamine drug or get that hit, that high. I was like, where is he going to go next? And he goes after Jeremy Lin. And it's like, this guy, it does feel like he is using LeBron James's name and capitalizing off of the fame of LeBron James. And in the same way that LeBron James isn't reciprocating because he knows what he's doing. A few years ago, Ennis Kanter Freedom was on The Jump, and he was on ESPN in studio. I think it was the 2018, after he had this like fight with LeBron James on the floor when he was with the Knicks, and Frank Ntilikina was...
Yeah, I remember it. Mm-hmm.
They got into it because he was sticking up for Frankie, and they went after each other. And then, this was 4 years ago, and they've always been beefing, right? These two. Ennis Kanter Freedom on the show, in studio, was laughing because he sincerely wanted LeBron James to give him his shoes, signed shoes, so Ennis could go and sell it on eBay and make a bunch of money. He made that joke on air on The Jump saying he wished LeBron James got his shoes so he could sell LeBron James merch and make a lot of money off of it. So even in this, Howard, like, I can't tell his sincerity here.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer. Howdy, folks. It's Mike Ryan. I'm living the gimmick right now. The playoffs have already gotten me, and we're a couple of days into it. It's like a playoff equinox that's going on right now. It's ridiculous. And if you're like me, you like rooting on your team. Trust me, I just bought three for my wife, daughter, and myself for game one. I live it. Because I've been out there. I've been out in those streets. I've been panicking last second trying to find deals. And then when I eventually settle on something, I'm not sure if it's the lowest price out there. And I'm getting just totally blitzed with surprise fees. Well, thankfully, Game Time takes it out of the equation. All the fees are up front. There's no surprises. You get to see what your seat looks like. It's amazing the technology we have these days. But Game Time has your back always. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app right now, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute deals, lowest price, guaranteed.
Let me ask you this, and I'm not switching gears. I'm throwing this out to both of you. Do you believe that there's any sincerity in the political position he's taking, because he is siding politically with a real right-wing side of this conversation? Does it matter to him that he is being positioned as embracing, you know, a really anti-black position in a black league?
Yeah, well, look at the fact that he was in Boston and he got a rousing ovation, right?
Well, that's
Boston. It's his home team, right? That's Boston. Ha ha ha.
And also, everybody in Boston will always cheer if you do anything to make LeBron uncomfortable.
There's a lot of that, too. And there's a lot of, you know, when Tucker Carlson is asking, really did feel like he was talking to, like, my five-year-old daughter, right?
He was baiting
him, like, oh, isn't that so, that really makes me feel great, what your answer is. Me too, NS. Me too, freedom. But when he starts to conjure up your teammates, and the coded language when he's saying, you know, how do your teammates feel about this? The pretext there is obvious, is that he didn't go after the front office in the NBA or the referees. He said his teammates. And the idea is that, like, what does Jaylen Brown think about this?
Yep.
What does Robert Williams think about this? That to me speaks to him leaning into that political high that he's getting. When Ted Cruz is now on some sort of podcast saying, you know, the Women's Tennis Association has more balls than the NBA.
Yeah. The real question is, how does Rick Grosbeck and Steve Pagliuca feel about this? Because you're costing them the money.
And I'm sitting here and I'm saying, Howard, like, think about this high that he's getting. He is getting so much publicity off of just evoking LeBron James's name. And so I keep coming back to this, is like, he had beef with LeBron James before this, and he realized how much publicity he got just by uttering LeBron James's name. And he's continuing to go back to that well because he knows it gets Ted Cruz's attention. He knows it gets the number one cable news network show their attention too. And this is also someone who wanted to be in the WWE, who has a standing offer to join the WWE after his playing days are done. So it's hard for me to understand exactly how much of this is just he's playing to the fame of it, that he loves hearing himself speak. He loves seeing himself on Fox News or CNN. And how much of this is like angling for a post-NBA career job.
Setting himself up for the broadcast booth already.
Yeah, and this is different than J.J. Redick starting his own podcast network. This is different than a lot of players. You know this, Amin. After the last few years of their career, they start trying to figure out what they're going to do. And what am I going to do once I wrap my playing careers up and I have to hang up these shoes, right? Enes Kanter is 29 years old. He's making $2.7 million from the Boston Celtics. He is looking like he's on his way out of the league. And this might be, Howard, what we see from all these athletes is, what am I going to do next?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to throw something out at you as well on this, in that let's just take a step back and let's go fly a little high. Let's go up to the 30,000 foot view on this. This is not a joke. You look at what is happening right now in China. We still have not heard from Peng Shuai. We are already hearing that the White House is not sending a delegation to China for the Olympics in opposition to China's human rights record. We've already seen what was happening with Daryl Morey and what was happening with Hong Kong. And we've seen, you know, if you go back to when the Turkish delegation was in the United States a couple of years ago, that brawl that they had out in D.C. This is a really dangerous game to be gaining publicity off of. I could see if you wanted attention, there's a lot of ways to get attention. But these subjects are not something that you toy with. And I mean, I guess what I'm going to throw over to you is, isn't this a little dangerous? Isn't this a little reckless? If we're going to conclude that all Enes Kanter really wants is attention, is this the way to get attention?
It is the most dangerous game, Howard, because you're dealing with entities that aren't just going to be upset, right? Just like, I'm cross with you, Enes. You're dealing with some dangerous people here. But ultimately, what he gains out of it, like I said, you know, the example that Tom gave is a perfect example. He's not looking for, an actual fight. He just likes the attention because he's got that locker room lawyer, carnival barker spirit about him. And the reality is, none of this really does anything for the Uyghurs in China. And I'm not, I don't mean to sit here and be whatabouting. I'm just saying that the fruits of his labor are just TV hits and seeing his name trend on Twitter.
Yeah, but they have a real effect on LeBron James and Jeremy Lin and whoever else he scatters and takes and starts firing at. That's, once again, like I said, we're not talking about something. It's not just that those are dangerous people. It's also that you're dealing with subjects that are extremely important subjects. You know, I mean, this isn't a joke.
There's a conversation to be had over the last, you know, 6, 7, 10 years in this country where everything is up for play. I once said this on the show where I said, the day politics and, you know, foreign policy and all these things started getting covered like sports was the day we were lost, because everything is a score. And everything is like, oh, this guy, and they scored over here, and now the Republicans are up 5-3, and it cheapens. Like
when you're watching CNN, I mean, Tom, who won the day?
Right. It cheapens.
It's a Senate bill. What do you mean, who won the day?
It cheapens it all. It cheapens the real incredible nuance that these things can't be boiled down to party lines. Again, all the people who love watching Tucker Carlson, I guess, and say, oh, yeah, that's right. Got him right where it hurts, LeBron. How about that? It's like, wait a second. You think that people who vote like you do and watch the programming you do don't benefit from China? Don't have those same hypocrisies that we talked about at the beginning of this? We're all in it. We're all inextricably.
It's Godfather 2. It's Michael Corleone. We're all part of the same hypocrisy. I mean, we talk about this all the time. And one of the things that I repeat, I have it on speed dial, is do an inventory of your own house. Everything in your house was made in China, right?
Yeah. So including Trump paraphernalia, like Trump
including
merchandise,
all of that stuff. Now, the one thing that I will say that is, I don't want to say it's nonpartisan, because it isn't. Everything in some ways is partisan. There's always a good opportunity for us to step back and recognize that, yes, we do live in a place where if you criticize Barack Obama or George Bush or Donald Trump, you're not going to get taken away in an unmarked car. That is something that is real. And that is something that I think everybody in this country, for the most part, understands, if not appreciates in a certain way. But I do think that's something that we have here. But you can certainly see where the appeal would come from, right? To say, hey, let's take a minute and recognize what we do have here. But you can't really do that when you have either sophomoric or sinister intentions behind it. When what you're really trying to do is tell people who actually have real issues, the real issue that we've been talking about in this country for more than a decade now is actual police brutality, right? Mm-hmm. They're not just talking about saying whatever they want to say. You're talking about real issues here. And you're talking about, you know, the legal system being completely unfair and not living up to the ideals and all this. Is this, are these subjects really what you want to play cotton candy with, Enes Kanter?
I wonder how familiar he is with these subjects. He talks about
that you want to educate LeBron James.
Yeah.
Patronizing as you could possibly be.
So it is one of those things where I don't know where the solution lies, because, you know, I like the way you put it, Howard, sophomoric or sinister. He's definitely more sophomoric than anything else. But does Enes Kanter grow up at some point? And by grow up, I don't mean abandon these pursuits. I mean, do them right. Do them. Do the work. Do a better job of it. I think the biggest issue I have is him allowing himself to be a puppet for people who have no interest in either the things that he claims to seek justice for or the things that LeBron James seeks to get justice for either. These people don't care about police brutality any more than they care about the Uyghurs.
They care about Turkey.
Exactly.
They care about any of it.
They're just here because he allows them for a moment to say, see, it ain't our fault. Your Messiah over here, your chosen one, is this your king? He's doing the same shit too. So hence, we're all absolved. We can go back to doing whatever shitty stuff we do in support.
Do you think he knows the politics of Tucker Carlson, or do you think he only cares about the audience of Tucker Carlson?
I think he cares about the audience. I think he cares about someone who, when he says stuff, is going to say, rah, rah, rah. Yeah, get it. And what, like you said, the leading questions of, yeah, what about this? What about, yeah, say something about that guy too. Because he knows, oh, this is what the audience wants, huh? It's like almost like a stand-up comic going to the crowd for, hey, what do you guys want me to make jokes about? Oh, the Cuomo brothers. Oh, the Cuomo brothers. I've never seen, you know, like that's what he's doing. He's taking audience requests. So I don't think
I'm curious, though, because when I asked that, I'm asking because a couple years ago, Enes Kanter, during the Black Lives Matter, kneeling during the anthem or interlocking their arms during the anthem for the NBA, he came out and said, I wanted to take a knee during the anthem, but my teammates wanted to interlock their arms.
And he spoke at a BLM rally in Boston, I believe, right? So, yep. And that's why I'm saying about, are you aware of the company you're keeping right now, that you're allowing yourself to be used in a certain way that does run counter to the values you say you have? And also you're falling into a very, very dangerous spot. And the dangerous spot is, in this country, anybody who is willing to criticize Black people, especially the most prominent Black people like LeBron James, you'll have a job for life, especially if you happen to be a minority or an immigrant or somebody who's from one of the minority communities. And that's the point that I was also trying to make. If you're Enes Kanter, is this the bed you want to jump in? Because think about the league that you play in. Now, maybe this is already exit strategy stuff. I'm not going to be an assistant coach. My career is coming to an end, whatever. And I'm just going to go. But it does also sound like that lights camera is as intoxicating as any drug.
They are the perfect symbiotic relationship for the right wing, or for prejudiced people. I should say the right wing, for prejudiced people, because it allows them to say, see, if I'm as awful as you say I am, why would this person who clearly has the same background as all these other people are complaining? They're not complaining. Charles Barkley was famously one of those people that they used a lot. Bill Cosby was one of those people.
Well, and didn't Bradley Beal shut that down when they tried him?
Tried Bradley Beal too. That's what, was it Ted Cruz?
Yeah.
That was trying to, you know, co-opt, almost gentrify Bradley Beal into his rhetoric. And Bradley Beal said, hell no. But that's,
I'm not
but
riding
that's,
with you.
But that's the awareness of someone who is A, grown up in this country, and B, is surrounded by people who know the game.
Yeah, and there is a game taking place here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so does Ennis understand? Probably not. But is Ennis surrounded by people who understand? Also, probably not.
No, I would like to be a fly in the wall when he and Jaylen Brown are having their conversations in the Celtics locker room.
I wonder if they're having those conversations. Because I'd be curious if those, if it is almost like, hey man, you're on your own here. I really do wonder how much of this is an open conversation in that locker room with Jaylen Brown, who is as opinionated as anyone when it comes to civil rights issues in this country, and speaking out against injustices. When here is Ennis Kanter, who, by the way, a couple years ago with LeBron James, continued beef. Like, this is a very personal thing for him, for Ennis. When he said after a game, I don't care who you are, talking about LeBron, what do you call yourself, king? Princess?
Yeah, I remember that. Yes.
He basically making these misogynistic comments about LeBron James and calling him a princess as if that's, you know, a funny thing. And LeBron James responded in his next press conference saying, like, no, I'm the king, and then my wife is the queen, and my daughter is the princess, all taken care of. And this is why I feel like he's trying to set himself up for either a political career or a WWE just showman career, or maybe both, because it does seem like he's playing up this character that is very trash-talky Carnival Barker for his second career.
You're giving him so much more credit. I don't think it's that... I really don't think it's that long-term of a vision. Like I said, the bell rung. Ooh, I want to make that sound again. What do I got to say? Where do I have to say it? Just to feel that again and again and again. I think it's very short-sighted, short-term. And again, I got to stress this. I think deep down, he sincerely does care about what's happening in China. But... he's not doing anything about it other than getting himself attention, which I think is what's driving his motives. It's driving what's happening here. It could be both things, right? It could be like, man, that's messed up. But let me go out here and, you know, give these people one more show. And I don't think there's any kind of long-term plan there. It's like, and then I'll run for governor. No, I think he's just a guy.
There is something to be said for, I mean, just from a selfish standpoint, yesterday people were making fun of me because I don't play any defense. And today I'm on every network in the country. There is something to be said, not to be said in terms of a positive, but in terms of motive, right? Here's the toy that works that people want to play with. Mm-hmm. And it sounds to me, Tom, like you were suggesting, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, but that we are in a 15 minutes phase right now. And he recognizes that there's a 15 minutes phase going on here.
Yeah. And how much longer can he be named NBA star? Not much longer, right?
Like NBA star speaks out. They always have speaks out.
It should be star in parentheses, question mark?
Yeah.
And that's the end of the cry on NBA star? No, hey, look, it's like any one of these kids on social media, on Instagram, you see this where they'll walk up and they'll do something like just genuinely socially awkward. And then when they're about to get their ass beat, oh, it's a prank. And I'm like, that's not a prank. You're just being a dick, right? Any more than the guy?
Just a joke.
Yeah, it was just a prank. Or any more than the guy that films himself giving a homeless person like $1,000? Did that change that homeless person's life? Perhaps. Yes. You know, if it's sincere and they got the money and they got to do something with it, but it doesn't take away that you didn't do it to help the homeless guy.
You did it for yourself. This is performative.
You exploited this person and their need and their desperate situation to create a viral moment on an app somewhere. And I think on some level, what Cantor's doing is no different than that. He's basically exploiting a real life desperate situation that deserves to be addressed in order to go viral, in order to do the circuit.
The goal is to go viral. I remember 9/11. And we had the shutdown. I was living in New York, and then we're waiting to go back to the ballpark. We go to Yankee Stadium to go talk to the players. And then, of course, we go to Chicago to resume the season. And it always fascinated me, especially during those first couple of months post 9/11. You got your tape recorder going and you got your notebook going. And I'm asking myself, why am I talking geopolitics with Mike Stanton? why am I asking Andy Pettit about Middle East policy? And so now, 20 years later, post Trayvon Martin, post Ferguson, you know, now that the players talk about everything post militarism in sports where, you know, there's an induction ceremony at halftime of every football game. So now that it's all political, are we starting to reach the downside of the slope of the players using their quote unquote platform when you see stuff like this? I mean, you know, when I listen to Kyrie Irving start talking how he doesn't talk to pawns, and I'm listening to Enes Kanter do this, and I'm listening to the Aaron Rodgers show, part of me says, oh, so you wanted them to use their platforms, right? We wanted them to talk and now they're talking. Have we reached the end of this?
The difference between Andy Pettit and Mike Stanton and Enes Kanter Freedom is that Enes Kanter Freedom has been the subject of a repressive regime that arrested his father and charged him with, you know, dissent and whatnot.
Trying to overthrow the government. He got a 15-year sentence, which got overturned, but that's right. Real so stuff.
That's real stuff. And the fact that he was in Indonesia for an event and then apparently was about to be detained and kidnapped by the Turkish government and got on a plane to Singapore and then to Romania and then to London to get back to the United States. It's very real stuff that separates him from, I think, Kyrie Irving and from Mike Stanton or Andy Pettit that you're asking, you know, about these issues when they're athletes, right? But again, I mean, like I'm sitting here and I'm wondering, if you're an NBA GM, like the future for Enes Kanter Freedom in the league, like if you're looking at Enes Kanter, it's not just like, can he rebound for our team? Is he going to play passable enough pick and roll defense? Can he move laterally enough to stay in front of the Steph Currys of the world when we need to play them in the playoffs? The question is, business-wise, are we cool with if China doesn't broadcast any of our games and the business ops side of the NBA is calling us every day and saying like, this is a problem? He apparently was confronted by two NBA officials, he claims. Approached by two NBA officials before the Celtics season opener, and he was told to get rid of his shoes. He couldn't wear these shoes that had those anti-Chinese propaganda remarks on his shoes.
You're messing with our money, pal.
And he said to them, what rule am I breaking? Tell me what rule I'm breaking and I'll take these off. I wonder if Boston is regretting, but they're reevaluating the $2.7 million that they're offering to be a third string center for this Boston Celtics club, whether it's all worth it. Like if this is an equation, a cost benefit analysis, that future GMs are going to look at this and say, now it is costing money. Is this really what we're prepared to do?
So the irony is the way he told the story, one would think he was then grabbed and forcibly had the shoes removed from him, had to walk into the stadium barefoot. But we know that didn't happen. He got to keep the shoes and he keeps wearing them. So there isn't a rule. They didn't force him to do something. But they can advise you, this is probably not going to be great for your career. Why? The number one reason why, Tom, is not what he's saying. It's how good he is as a player, which has been the story since the beginning of time.
You're not good enough to get away with this.
Mike D'Antoni once said, I will play the devil. I will play Satan if he can hit a shot. Right? Meaning like, look, we're willing to put up with a lot of bullshit if you're good enough. The less good you are, the less bullshit we'll put up with.
And the less of you we want to hear from.
Because the idea is you're not unique. There are other guys who are just as good as Enes Kanter. We picked you. Regardless of how the process ended, in terms of players of your caliber, we picked you. We could have picked him.
We could find a lot of guys who can kind of
exactly. Play. Oh, exactly. A lot of guys who can kind of play. Exactly. There's guys in the G League. There's guys on the waiver wire. There are guys on other teams that aren't getting minutes. You're not unique enough for us to do that. The high end of the spectrum is Kyrie Irving, right? The idea is that Kyrie Irving is approaching that level of, I don't know if I want this guy. I know he's great. I don't want him. And to me, he's reached that level because of one really important thing. Because he doesn't play.
He's not playing.
Kyrie Irving was doing all this shit but still available to play basketball games, I think there is more of an appetite for him. At this point right now, people are like, beyond like a local ordinance that is preventing him from playing, there is a feeling that Kyrie Irving at any given moment can say, I don't feel like playing, because he's done it already. Did it last year, right around the Capitol riot time. He'd taken mental health breaks, and say what you will, how great it is to normalize that stuff. But at the end of the day, if I'm paying you $33 million to be one of the best players on my team, if not the entire league, I kind of need you to do that.
Yeah. And I was going to say, to Tom's point, when you're talking about Enes Kanter's father, essentially was accused of being part of a coup attempt against the Erdogan government and was sentenced to 15 years in prison. That's the very reason why you don't play candy with these issues. You mm-hmm. better be down with these issues. This is it's an insult to have that be part of your life and be part of your family's life. And all you really want to do is get on TV. That's why I'm saying to this. That's why I'm asking, doesn't there have to be more than this? Or is it's an incredibly shallow thing to my way of thinking that you're faced with these issues in your family. We're dealing with a Peng Shui issue. We know what's happening. The Ukrainian tennis players during the Olympics in 2014 had no comment about what was going on during the Sochi Olympics. Everybody knows the real stakes. And also, and it's one of the reasons too, why when you look at that pander to what's happening in this country, you've got people in the United States right now wearing yellow stars like it's Kristallnacht over mask wearing. There's a real danger here, trivializing and being cavalier about these landmarks, right? So to me, the point that I keep getting back to is he may very well be a carnival barker, and he may very well be somebody not to be taken seriously. But if that is the case, he's doing some real damage here on real life issues.
Yeah, I wonder how they feel, Fox News, Tucker Carlson, if they feel like they're checking off a box when they bring on Enes Freedom. Is like, oh, we don't hate the NBA. We don't hate black people because here we have Enes Kanter Freedom on the show. And speaking of Islamophobia that Tucker Carlson gets accused of too, is like, oh, we can't hate Muslim people. Like, we have Enes Kanter Freedom here who has prayer during the national anthem. And like, I worry that he is being, not worry from a sense of like, I don't think he cares what I think. But the idea is when you're Enes Kanter Freedom and that bell stops ringing, what do you do then? You turn around and you thought these Tucker Carlson, you know, right-wing Fox News conservative pundits really care about him. Hey, I want to speak out for Black Lives Matter and I want to kneel with my fellow black players. Can I come on the program to talk about this with you guys? Remember when I came on a couple months ago and you guys like, you know, got out the pom-poms and stuff? What do you think? And I don't think they're going to answer him because they got their single use Enes Kanter soundbite.
He exists to them because he supports their overall viewpoint, which isn't that China is awful and we should do something about it. Their overall viewpoint is LeBron and all these other black people need to shut the hell up.
That's
and
right.
here comes a guy who's going to help us make that case that they need to shut up and be appreciative of what they have rather than complaining about what they're subject to. And In that regard, as I said, Kanter is just a noisemaker being held by people who support those viewpoints. It makes me sad, and I really hope that, again, earlier Howard used the word sophomoric. I hope he graduates from that, and because there is work to be done in the things that he purports to have interest in. It can't be like that. The way he's going about it doesn't help. It doesn't fix anything. All it does is just create a 15 minutes or 15 seconds, I guess, nowadays, moment to last one more second. And it's nothing more than that. So hopefully there's going to be a change or a growth that happens there that allows him to actually pursue these very worthy causes.
Well, as if we need more noise. There is plenty of grist for the mill. And once again, if you're going to take on these subjects, these aren't the ones that you want to be cavalier about. And, I was going to say as a last thought, let's see what happens, because aren't the Lakers and the Celtics playing each other this week? So now we have another opportunity. If there is something real for LeBron and Enes Freedom to say to each other, maybe we'll see it this week.
I feel bad for Jeremy Lin waking up this morning and being like, whoa, what the hell happened?
Talk about catching a stray. What did I do?
Yeah. And like, to Amit's point, the way he's going about this and just blasting Jeremy Lin, shame on you, rather than being like, hey, Jeremy, let's, you know, we both are in the fraternity of the NBA. Let's let's talk about these issues. Let's have an open forum and let's really have a constructive conversation about this. And it seems like neither LeBron or Ennis have any desire to well, Ennis says he has a desire to do this. LeBron James doesn't. I don't know how sincere Ennis is about actually talking to LeBron James. That, like Amin said, that could happen. That if he wanted it to happen, you could make it happen at an NBA arena or after that. But we'll see what happens here after the game.
Indeed. Indeed. That is Tom Haverstraw, Amin El-Hassan. I am Howard Bryant. And I still think that we need to give our Meadowlarkers episodes a number. This was Meadowlarkers 120 or something like that. But I'm not winning that battle, but I'm still going to advocate for it.
Yes, I'm with you. I love numbers. So yes, more right. Metal Arc numbers. Let's go.
More numbers, right? More numbers. So until next week, thanks, boys.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm going to kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.